If you'd like to turn with me to 2 Kings, 2 Kings chapter 6, we move on from the story of the axe head floating. I don't know what you thought as you went away from last week's message. Did we get a grip on that particular text? I hope so. Let's move on. Sure, there's more that we can learn from it, but I hope that I was enabled to bring out the main point. Let's look this evening at the story that comes next. In my Bible, the International Version, it's entitled "Elisha Traps Blinded Arameans." So we read from verse 8, 2 Kings chapter 6. Starting to read at verse 8. Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. And after conferring with his officers, he said, "I will set up camp in such and such a place." The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, "Beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there." So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and time again, Elisha warned the king, so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, "Tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel?" "None of us, my lord the king," said one of his officers, "but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." "Go find out where he is," the king ordered, "so I can send men and capture him." The report came back, "He is in Dothan." Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As the enemy came toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike this army with blindness." So he struck them with blindness Elisha had asked. Elisha told them, "This is not the road. And this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you are looking for." And he led them to Samaria. After they entered the city, Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see." Then the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked. And there they were, inside Samaria. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elijah, "Shall we kill them, my father? Shall I kill them?" "Do not kill them," he answered. "Would you kill those who have captured with your would you kill those you have captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master." So he prepared a great feast for them. And after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. So the bands of Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. Well, this is quite a long story, but there are three things from it that I want to impress upon us. Firstly, the enemies of God witness the uncanny protection of his people. The enemies of God witness the uncanny protection of his people. In verse 8, we see that the king of Aram, and thus Aram, was at war with Israel. Israel, you will remember, because I've mentioned this quite a number of times before, amounted to the 10 tribes in the north. Judah, of course, was to be found in the south. The nation as a whole had divided by this time. Well, the king of Aram kept setting up his camp in different places, but every time he did so, Elisha was able to tell the king of Israel what he was doing, and thus he put his own men on guard in and around those places. This, of course, led to the king of Aram feeling somewhat enraged and wanted to know how the king of Israel always seemed to know his next step. And so he called his officers to himself and said, how can this be? I suspect initially he thought that there was a mole amongst his own officers. But of course the officers said, it's not us. It's Elisha, the prophet of the Lord. He tells the king of Israel your every step. He tells him what your every move is. In fact, Elisha knows the very things that you say in the privacy of your own bedroom. You see, nothing is hidden from Yahweh, is it? He sees all. He knows all. So here we see the protection of God's people. I wonder how many times God has protected us physically in some way. God does protect his people physically. But he doesn't always, does he? There's no promise. There's no guarantee that he will. The early church, as we know, faced terrible persecution. God did not keep them from that. As we read the history of the Christian church, we discover that in some places the church has almost been wiped out completely. In fact, I think I would go as far as arguing that in some places it has been wiped out completely. Yet, of course, God does protect the souls of his people. And I think that's the all-important thing, isn't it, for us to hold on to. You see, what can man ultimately do to us as God's people? When God is looking after, when God is watching over, when God is protecting our soul. So firstly, we see the enemies of God witness the uncanny protection of his people. Secondly, we see the servants of God. We see that the servants of God see the unseen protection of God. The servants of God see the unseen protection of God. The king of Aram is, of course, enraged that Elisha is telling the king of Israel his every move, and so he sends his men to find out where Elisha is. He wants to take him captive. He wants to prevent him from continuing to do his work that's frustrating his purposes and plans. And the report comes back, verse 13, that Elisha is in Dothan. So the king of Aram sends out a considerable force that includes horses and chariots in order to take Elisha captive. In fact, he surrounds the city. Now, when Elisha's servant, and I don't think we know who he is for sure, steps out of his house or wherever he lives the following morning, he sees this great force. And understandably, he is alarmed. "Oh, my Lord," he says, "what shall we do?" Now, I find verse 17 really quite fascinating. You see, Elisha asks the Lord to open his servant's eyes so that he is able to see unseen spiritual realities. The Lord answers Elisha's prayer, and his servant sees Elisha surrounded by horses and chariots of fire And it's those two words of fire that tell us what they amount to, doesn't it? This is the Lord's army. It's myriads of angels that he sees. That these are the angels, I would argue, that Jesus could, in one sense, have called upon to come and rescue him when he hung upon the cross. They were there, they were ready and waiting to come to his aid, but of course they remained idle because it was the will of the Father that Jesus should go to the cross, and Jesus knew that, and that's why he didn't call upon them. Matthew 26 and verse 53. I don't know whether you've ever read a book on angels. I think there are a few out there. If I'm right, I think that Billy Graham has written one of them. I haven't read any, but I do know that angels are sent from heaven in order to serve the Lord's people. A story came to my mind that I'd read some time ago as I was preparing for this evening. I wish that I'd made a record of where, you know, I'd read the story, and then I would be able to tell it accurately this evening. So I'm going to have to try to do my best from memory. Forgive me, please, if I don't get everything quite right. But there was a missionary who went to serve the Lord in some jungle around the world, and there he was seeking to make the gospel known, living in a little hut. And on one particular occasion, some of the natives, they were men, made their way to his hut with all the war paint on and their spears in their hands, and their intent was clear. It was to kill him. They didn't want him there in the jungle. And of course, this man was somewhat alarmed by that, and he prayed that the Lord would deliver him. And what happened was this, that these men who had come to his hut suddenly turned around and fled. They went home. And at the time, he had no idea as to why this was. But later, he heard that these men had come to his hut, and all of a sudden, they had seen his hut surrounded by men that were shining and were holding swords. An army that was clearly too powerful for them to take on. An army that they were frightened by. And his only explanation was that it was the army of the Lord, that the angels of God were providing him with the protection that he needed. The servants of God see the unprotection of God. Well, we don't see what's going on, do we, within the spiritual realm? But with faith, we must surely acknowledge that God, you know, has his angels who are able and willing to protect his people. Thirdly and lastly, the enemies of God receive his unexpected protection. The enemies of God receive his unexpected protection. The enemy came towards Elisha. Elisha prayed to the Lord and asked him to strike the Arameans with blindness. And the Lord answered his prayer in the affirmative. And Elisha, as we read, went out to the Arameans and said, "Look, you're in the wrong place. You're on the wrong road. Let me guide you to the place where the man you're looking for can be found." And so he led them all the way to Samaria. Samaria being the capital city of Israel and the place where the king and many of his forces or his soldiers would have been. Indeed, he led them right into the city. And then he prayed that the Lord would open their eyes again. And the Lord answered his prayer, and their eyes were opened. And of course, they suddenly realized where they were and that they were sitting ducks. They must have been terribly alarmed, mustn't they? They must have thought that was it. And we read, don't we, that the king of Israel said to Elisha, what shall I do now? Shall I kill them all? Here's our opportunity. But Elisha said no. Elisha said, feed them and give them something to drink. And so the enemies of God on this particular day were able to enjoy a feast given to them by those living in Samaria. And what a feast it was. And they went home, no doubt, with full tummies and were able to report to their king what they had experienced. And we read in verse 23 that the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. And perhaps it's not surprising that we read that in view of the way that the king of Israel and those in Samaria treated them. It could have been so different, couldn't it? Well, as I round things up this evening, I just want to say two things very briefly by way of application. Firstly, isn't this the way we are to behave towards our enemies, to those who give us a hard time, to those who persecute us? It falls perfectly in line with what Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount. Let me read to you what he said. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Now, I recognize that is a tough thing to do. But clearly that is what Jesus would have us do. The second thing I would just want us to note as we conclude is the way in which these Arameans, these Gentiles, came under the shield and Son of God, or of Yahweh. What a lovely thing to be able to read about. I think all of us in this room are Gentiles. I don't think that any of us are Jews. Naomi went to a meeting the other evening, and that there were a few Jewish people in the room, Jewish Christians. But I'm pretty confident that all of us here this evening are Gentiles. Well, as Gentiles who were once far away from God, as a result of trusting in Jesus, have been brought under the shield and the Son of Yahweh, haven't we? And God, according to the New Testament, is inviting Gentiles today, all around the world, to trust in his Son Jesus and to come under his shield and his protection. We can be those who enjoy the benefits of God's people. Well, it's a lovely story. I enjoyed reading it. It's one that I refer to from time to time. And, well, why not go home and read it again and seek to learn perhaps even more from it. Next week, God willing, we'll think about the famine in besieged Samaria. But let's stand again and sing. Number 707, we rest on thee, our shield and our defender. Though I don't think it begins with these words, because praise has changed the words. I can't remember how they begin, but let's stand and sing. Beg your pardon.
We trust in you.